The Edge of the World Art Studio is proud to present Helen of the Iron Horse, written by Paris Danielle Lee. Artwork by Helen Rachel Lee. Music by Fish Zombie and the Onions. And a special thanks to Spooky the Cat for her contributions, fuzzy as they might be. Chapter 16, Part 1, The River. I stuck my head out of the carriage window, leaning over Paris, my right hand resting lightly on top of hers.
Odie, can we stop the carriage, please?
I called out to Odysseus. He held his horse back to match the speed of the carriage and ride next to the window. We're not stopping.
I'd like to stop, please. We have been traveling for a week. I need a rest, or I may be shaken apart. I've been good. It's been 7 days since we got off the train, and the carriage is not nearly as comfortable. I don't have a bed. I don't have a tea set. We can't play chess. All the pieces keep falling down. We have been traveling for so long. We need to stop. I want to stand on solid ground for more than just to eat and relieve myself. I need a new set of clothes. I need to wash the ones I am wearing. And I need to bathe. If we stop, we could set up camp here. Anna and I could find a place along the river where we can bathe.
I pointed to the river we had been traveling next to since morning.
Look, I can see that you and your men don't really care what they smell like, and I'm fine with that. It's just that I'm a lady, and I really can't go any further in this condition. Please, can we stop?
We're not stopping. We're behind as it is. We will be stopping for supplies tomorrow. If we stop now, it will be the day after tomorrow before we reach the fort. So, you'll just have to wait and have your bath then. I felt Paris's hand pull me back into the carriage. She replaced me at the window, but instead of talking to Odysseus, she drew a pistol from her waist. Holding it by the barrel, she leaned out and tapped the carriage on the side near the driver. "Stop the carriage," she commanded the carriage driver, and though she wasn't pointing the gun at him, its presence made him nervous. So, despite the fact that he worked for Odysseus, he pulled on the reins and slowed to a stop. She looked at me, smiling. "You have the key," she reminded me. I pulled at the ribbon around my wrist, popping the key into my hand. I slipped it through the window and unlocked the carriage from the outside. With the door now open, I stepped slowly from the carriage.
"We're losing time, and it's not safe here. Get back in the carriage. We need to get going."
"No," I said. And the words tingled through me. I don't remember having told anyone no before. I must have protested other things they asked me to do, but maybe this time what the difference was, I meant it. I was not going back into the carriage. I was not going to let them continue for the day. As Paris followed me out of the carriage, I could feel her presence standing behind me. With her there, I knew I could back up my words. With her there, I knew no one could force me to comply. Except the champion. What a dangerous gift they'd given me. I walked to where Castor sat on his horse, leaving Odysseus behind to stare at Paris.
"You know, you can't just pull a gun every time you want something," Odysseus grumbled at Paris.
"Oh, I know. And I don't. But it does seem that I do need to pull a gun every time she wants something. That's strange, isn't it?"
She had a crooked smile, and she slowly put her gun back in its holster. "You told me that I would be escorting a woman to her wedding. You didn't tell me I would be transferring a prisoner."
"That how you see it? Is that what she told you?"
"That's not what's going on here. That's how it looks to me. She doesn't want to be here."
"She wants to be here. I know you don't see it, but I really do have her best interests at heart. This is going to be good for her, and she knows it. Though she likes to play the victim. She agreed to all of this.
Ask her, and don't let her get poetic or shift the subject. Ask her directly if she'd like to go home. If she says she'd like to return to New York, I will turn the entire wagon train around. We'll head back tomorrow, Odysseus said as he watched the words soak into Paris. Paris looked past him to watch me as I spoke to Castor. Castor, bring me my bathing kit and a change of clothes. And also, do we have any whole walnuts? Yes, miss, I think that can be arranged. Thank you, Castor. I will need 2 walnuts, I said, as he dismounted and headed to the carriage. Well, I called off to Odysseus in the distance, aren't you going to set up camp? Odysseus frowned and then in a loud voice announced, Everybody, we're camping here tonight. Set it up. Odysseus watched the men work, and Castor and Paris began unloading boxes off the carriage. The other men began unloading the tents and camping gear. Paris untethered pony, preparing her to ride. I walked over to stand next to Odysseus. I don't know which one of you is worse, you or that bodyguard I hired for you. I like to think we're equally as bad. I know you're having fun, but you have to remember why we're here and what we're doing. I never forget for a moment why we're here. I want my key back. It doesn't belong to you, it belongs to Penelope. I'll send it back to her in the mail when all of this is done. That way, I'll be sure she gets it sometime within this decade. This isn't a game, Helen. Everything is a game, Odie. And once you understand that, then you can learn to play it properly. Paris finished preparing Pony for the journey. Castor brought me a basket that was full of new clothes and covered with a blanket. On top of the blanket, there were 2 walnuts. Sometimes I think you worry too much, Odie. You overthink things. You gotta learn to improvise and take yourself a little less seriously. I have a gift for you. It's something you wanted to see. I took the walnuts off the blanket and held them in my hand. I stepped away from Odysseus a few paces, and then, as loud as I could, I called to the rest of the men. Everybody, pay attention! I yelled. My bodyguard and I are going to ride upstream a bit so that we can have the opportunity to bathe before we continue this journey. Now, I understand the temptation that may lead some of you to think this would be a good time to see what we looked like out of our finer clothing. I want to discourage you. This is a very bad idea. To help you see that, I have arranged for a small demonstration. I held up the 2 walnuts. Paris leaned casually back on Pony, her arms folded across her chest. Watch the walnuts carefully, everyone. I pulled my hand back a little and then threw both walnuts into the air. Just before they reached their apex, Paris's hand flicked to her side and came up with a gun. Firing 2 bullets, the walnuts exploded. Paris, just as fast, put the gun back in her holster, then leaned once again upon Pony, her arms crossed. Now, for anyone who doesn't understand a metaphor, before you decide to come peek at us, you should ask my friend Oscar what that demonstration really meant. I smiled at him. There you go, Odie. You finally got to see her draw. What do you think? Odysseus looked amazed. I turned away from him and walked over to Paris. Paris took the basket from me and secured it to Pony. Then, after mounting, she held out her hand for me to grab. I reached for her, but instead of grabbing my hand, she reached further down and grabbed me by the forearm. She yanked me hard, and it felt for a moment like I was flying. Before I could understand where I was sitting sideways in front of her on the tan horse. Her arms wrapped around me, keeping me from falling. She held on to the reins in front of me. With a small flick of her wrists, the horse began to move forward, slowly. Paris couldn't help but glance back at Odysseus as we rode out of camp and upriver. I wrapped my arms around her, partially to secure my position, but also because I wanted to. I put my head on her shoulders. I could smell her hair. I could kiss her neck. And every once in a while, I would. She smelled like the dust and flowers. She did not need the bath I had demanded, not for my sake. But I needed time with her, time away from everyone else. We rode like this for some time. I'm not sure how long. I got lost in the moment. But at some point she stopped. Will this do? She asked. I looked around to see that we had stopped near a small turn in the river. A tiny waterfall had caused a pool, making a momentary calm in the flow of water. There was a large willow tree near the water that created a shadowed area over the grass and moss that led down to the river. "It's perfect," I said. I held her for a moment longer, then asked, "How do I get down?" "Oh, yeah, of course," she answered. She held my hands and let me slip carefully to the ground. I immediately went to retrieve the blanket. I spread it out under the shadow of the willow tree. Beneath it, there was a rope. I took the rope and headed towards the trees Paris was tying Pony up to. I strung the rope from tree to tree, tying it carefully and tight. "Go sit. I'll be right there," I instructed her. She raised her eyebrow at me and wandered off to sit under the tree. Once the line was all strung up, I walked back to the basket and began to remove the clothes inside. Paris watched me as I set out a new dress, chemise, bloomers, and stockings. She watched every piece as I set them carefully on top of one another. "Would you like to see my magic trick?" I asked her. "You know magic?" she questioned. "Of a kind." I began undoing the buttons on my dress with my hands until they were all done, and then I reached up to my collar and held my dress firmly, bowing, and with one pull, the dress slid forward and I slipped out from under it. I set the old one next to the new. Standing before her, in my underthings, I put my hand on either side of the front of my corset. Pushing the left and right side together, the front separated, and I pulled it off and set it aside. I took a large breath. "It opens from the front?" Paris asked me in slight disbelief. "Yes. I'm sorry I lied to you. I don't need help getting out of my clothes. Sometimes I need help getting back into them, but we'll get to that later." Sitting down in front of her, holding my legs together so that she couldn't see through the slit in my bloomers, I began undoing my shoes one at a time. "And the shoes don't come off first." "Of course not. How could I reach them while I have my corset on?" I removed each shoe and set it aside, then slipped each stocking off one at a time. Paris could not help but watch every moment. I could almost hear her heart beating. I stood before her now, wearing only my bloomers and chemise. "Are you going to bathe in that?" she asked me. "No, I'm not." Standing before her, I removed my chemise and dropped it into the pile next to me. Then I removed my bloomers and set it on top of the chemise. Standing before her now, naked, she seemed to have frozen. I leaned forward and kissed her lightly on the lips. Then, in her ear, I whispered, "Your turn." "What?" she snapped out of her trance, and I reached for the buttons on her shirt. "You're taking a bath, too. And you're not doing it in your clothes," I said as she tried to scoot back and out of my reach. I grabbed at the buckles of her gun belts, and I pulled her back to me. I began to undo the belts. "I can't. I'm here to protect you. I need to keep watch. There's no one here. I'm sure we're safe. But what if someone sneaks up on us? What if people were just waiting for us to separate from the caravan so they could kidnap you?" "Okay, which gun do you want?" "What?" "I'm going to take your clothes off. You're going to get into that river with me and clean up. I have soap, I have perfume and powder. I will not have my bodyguard wandering around the West smelling like a pigsty. After all, just because you're dressed like a man doesn't mean you have to smell like one. Now, pick a gun, and you can carry it with you while we bathe. You can hold it up over your head if you're afraid to get it wet." Her eyes were wide with surprise, and she looked around. But there were no doors to lock. There was no wall to hide us. Her hands came to rest on mine to stop me from taking off her gun belts. "Are you afraid of me? I wouldn't think you were afraid of anything. Is the big bad gunslinger afraid of pretty girls?" "No, it's not that. It's just, don't be so nervous. This is just what good girlfriends do. They bathe together because it's easier to clean each other than to try to do it all on your own. I can imagine that goes double for when you're bathing in the wild like this." I glanced towards the river. "It's going to be very cold, isn't it?" Probably. Okay, pick your gun. Here. Paris drew from the small of her back the single-action army pistol. I looked at it carefully to see if any of the ash remained, but it seemed clean now. Then, pulling hard, I removed her boots one at a time. I held out my hand as I stood and pulled her up. She stood mostly on her own. She held the gun as I undid the buckles and straps of her gun belts, setting them aside one at a time. I pulled up her sleeves and took the bracers that had the small guns on either side of them off. I unbuttoned her shirt. She was wearing nothing underneath it, and for the first time I saw her breasts. They were small and tight but beautiful. Her chest was square and her hips came in just a little. She looked at me as I studied her. I wanted to kiss them, but I knew I could not push her too far too fast. My hands reached down for the buttons on her pants, and once they were undone, I helped her step out of them. What she was wearing beneath her pants stopped me in surprise. "What are those?" I asked. "They're my bloomers." "No, they're not." I looked at the strange garment. It kind of resembled a pair of bloomers, but they were too short and not full enough, more like a thin pair of soft cotton shorts. They were cut only enough to go around, with no extra fabric for ruffles. There was lace on the top and bottom, with ribbons woven through the decoration. They had buttons on the front of the fly, with painted flowers. There was no slit down the center for necessities. "They've got lace on them." "Of course they have lace on them. They're my bloomers." "They're so feminine. I'm just surprised." "Why? I am a girl, you know." "Oh, I know. It's just that I've never seen anything like them. They're so cute. Where did you get them?"
"I made them. But they were my dad's design. He made them for me after I had a bit of trouble with saddle sores. I just seemed to be more sensitive for some reason. I found that if I was going to wear men's trousers, I couldn't quite wear them the way men did. I needed something between me and the rougher fabric."
"Well, I need to take them off before we bathe. I plan to wash our clothes."
"Go ahead," she smiled. "You can take them off if you'd like."
I carefully undid the flower buttons and slid the makeshift bloomers slowly down her hips. I could see her now, all of her.
"Well?" she asked. I realized that I was staring and I had stopped breathing.
"You're beautiful."
"Thank you. But I meant, are you going to wash our clothes?"
"Yes, of course," I said, coming back to myself. I began to gather the things I could wash, leaving behind my old dress, my corset, and her gun belts. At the bottom of the basket, next to a bar of soap, there was a small box and a bottle of wine. I opened the box to find that Castor had added a selection of dried fruits, dried meats, and some crackers. I pulled out the box and the wine and set it next to Paris. "It looks like Castor has left us some food. Have all you want. I'll be right back." I walked down to the river with the basket full of dirty clothes and the bar of soap that had been left with me. I looked back to see Paris nibbling on a cracker, watching me carefully. She wouldn't eat the meat, nor did she open the bottle of wine. I carefully washed each garment by hand, setting them back in the basket when they were clean. Once they were all done, I took them to the line I had strung up in the trees near Pony. I hung each piece carefully so that they could dry, once again taking special attention to marvel at Paris's bloomers. Then I walked back to Paris. Her eyes never left me. I held the soap in one hand, and my other hand held out for her.
"Your turn."
"I don't know if this is the best idea."
"Oh, I promise. This is the best idea I've ever had. Come on, you'll enjoy yourself. I will make sure of that," I promised.
This has been Helen of the Iron Horse, read by Paris Lee. Artwork by me, Helen Lee. All characters within are fictional and bear no intentional resemblance to anyone living or dead. Except, I guess, for Helen and Paris. See more of my artwork and Paris's writing at edgeoftheworldart.com. If you would like to comment on the show or ask any question, please email us at helenoftheironhorse@gmail.com. This podcast was made with the love and support of all of our friends at the LA LGBT Center's Trans Lounge. Thank you. Thank you.